You know, when you're building a high-performance race car, there's this this intense obsession with the engine. Like, everyone just wants to make it faster, lighter, more powerful.
Right. I mean, it's all about pushing that top speed.
Exactly. But if you drop a 1,000-horsepower engine into a chassis and you completely forget to upgrade the brakes and the steering wheel, you haven't really built a race car.
Yeah, you've built a very fast, very expensive disaster waiting to happen.
And that is the exact tension we are seeing in the world of artificial intelligence right now. Like, we are simultaneously building these incredibly powerful autonomous engines and scrambling to install the industrial grade brakes required to keep them on the track.
It's wild. It's just a constant race between capabilities and guardrails.
Welcome to the Java Rubber Duck podcast. This is our deep dive into the fast-moving world of AI and developer tools. I'm Alex.
And I'm Jordan.
If you are tuning in, it's because you are trying to find the signal in the absolute noise of the AI ecosystem right now, you know, without getting totally overwhelmed. We've got the sources, the change logs, the research, and we are going to break it all down for you.
Yeah, and we have a massive lineup today. We're looking at three major themes. First, some incredible AI tooling breakthroughs, starting with Gina AI's lightning-fast new retrieval model.
Second, the crucial push for safe and secure AI agent practices, which is being driven by a very real EU regulatory deadline and Docker's latest security logs.
And finally, we are unpacking a huge wave of developer tool updates from Claude Code, OpenAI Codex, and Llama.
Okay, let's dive into this first one. So Gina AI just released their latest re-ranker model. It's a 0.6 billion parameter list-wise re-ranker. And honestly, the architecture they've used here is just, it's incredibly elegant.
Yeah, and to set the stage for why this matters to developers building real-world applications, if you are building a retrieval augmented generation pipeline, or RG, the re-ranker is usually your critical bottleneck.
Oh, absolutely. It's always the slow part.
Right. Let's say you're building an internal search tool for your company's wiki. You type a question, your system does a fast vector search, and it pulls up maybe 50 to 100 candidate documents that might hold the answer.
But those documents are usually a total mess. Like, they are just rough matches at that point.
Exactly. So before you pass that massive pile of text to your main language model to actually generate an answer, you send it through a re-ranker to score and sort the documents, and you only keep the most relevant ones.
Right, and historically, those re-rankers use what's called uniform global attention, which basically means every single word or token is looking at every other token in all 50 of those documents simultaneously to figure out the context.
And when you're processing that many candidate documents, I mean, that global attention mechanism is just incredibly computationally expensive.
Yeah, it becomes the dominant latency cost of your entire application.
Yeah.
It's what makes an AI search app sit there spinning for 5 seconds, which just makes it feel super sluggish to the end user.
Totally. So here's where it gets really interesting. Gina AI replaces that uniform global attention with a hybrid scheme.
Okay, hybrid how?
Well, they use sliding window attention layers, so looking at chunks of maybe number 24 tokens at a time, and they interleave those with global attention layers, plus a pinned terminal global layer at the very end.
I think the best way to visualize this hybrid model is to compare it to how you might read a really dense technical textbook.
Right. You definitely don't read every single word of a textbook with maximum focus.
Exactly. You skim the paragraphs, and that's the sliding window attention, just looking at its immediate neighbors to get the gist. But then you carefully read the chapter summaries. That's the interleaved global attention.
Ah, I like that analogy.
And finally, you read the conclusion of the book, which is that terminal global layer. So you retain the full overarching context without wasting time agonizing over every single filler word.
And the way they trained this to understand that textbook format is fascinating. Like, they didn't just train it from scratch. They used a 3-stage self-distillation protocol.
Oh, man. Okay, self-distillation is one of my favorite techniques, but it can be a bit mind-bending. Let's break down how that actually works in practice here.
Sure. Basically, they start by training a massive, computationally expensive teacher model that uses full global attention everywhere. It's slow, but it's very smart.
Right.
Then they take a student model. Now, crucially, this student model has the exact same number of parameters as the teacher, but it is restricted to using that sparse hybrid attention we just talked about.
So the student has the same brain capacity, but it's only allowed to skim the paragraphs and read the summaries.
Precisely. And over multiple stages, they basically force the student model to mimic the exact outputs and internal states of the teacher model. By distilling the knowledge this way, the student learns how to make those same high-quality connections, but using a fraction of the computational effort.
And the practical results are just undeniable. They yield over 1.5 times faster inference on long documents compared to their previous model. But it's not just faster, it's measurably better.
Yeah, looking at the benchmarks, they saw nearly a 3-point absolute improvement in their retrieval ranking scores.
That's huge.
It really is. When you look at metrics that measure how often the truly correct document ends up in the top 10 results, this new hybrid approach absolutely crushes the older, slower methods. For a developer, a faster, more accurate re-ranker directly equals a cheaper, snappier end-user application.
All right, let's move on to our next story. Up next, we are looking at the massive regulatory hammer that just dropped on AI agents in Europe.
This is a major one. The EU AI Act's full set of obligations for high-risk AI systems officially took effect at the beginning of this month.
Yeah.
And the crucial detail that is, frankly, catching a lot of enterprise teams off guard is that there's absolutely no grandfathering window for existing deployments. If your system was in place before the deadline, well, it still has to comply immediately.
Yeah, this isn't just a slap on the wrist or some loose suggested guidelines. We are talking about mandatory risk management processes, deep bias analysis on your data governance, and technical documentation that is robust enough to literally reconstruct your entire AI system from scratch if auditors demand it.
Not to mention the logging requirements. I mean, they want immutable logs of inputs, outputs, the tools the AI calls, and the sources it retrieves data from.
Wow, that's comprehensive.
Plus, there are strict transparency requirements labeling deepfakes and explicitly notifying users they are interacting with an AI system. They specifically call out agent attack surfaces that developers need to secure, like prompt injection, data poisoning, retrieval manipulation, and insecure tool use.
Just to be clear for everyone listening, we are just looking at the facts of the regulation here. Regardless of where you stand on the politics of tech regulation, this is the reality on the ground if your software touches the European market. But look, I actually see an optimistic angle here. I really do. This represents a necessary maturing of the industry. The regulators are recommending frameworks like the NIST AI Risk Management Framework as a starting point. And that gives developers a standardized blueprint. We aren't just flying blind anymore.
That's a fair point. Having a blueprint definitely helps.
Yeah.
But this raises a very practical, very thorny developer dilemma. One of the core mandates here is meaningful human oversight.
Right.
And the regulation explicitly states it cannot just be a rubber stamp approval click by an operator who isn't actually paying attention.
Right. But, and here is my big question, how do you implement deep, meaningful human oversight without completely destroying the speed and the autonomy that makes an AI agent useful in the first place?
That is the problem.
Like, if I deploy an AI agent to automatically triage and resolve basic IT support tickets, and a human has to meaningfully review every single microaction the agent takes, reading the ticket, querying the database, drafting the response, I don't have an autonomous agent anymore. I just built a really tedious, expensive workflow tool.
Exactly. That is the million-dollar question right now. It goes back to your race car analogy earlier. We're being told to install brakes that are so heavy they might prevent the car from moving at all. Finding that balance between compliance and utility is going to define the next year of AI engineering.
Okay, shifting gears now. Moving on, the next story is about how Docker is helping security teams actually enforce these new agent policies in the real world.
Talk about perfect timing, right? Docker just launched CIEM integrated audit logs for Docker AI governance.
Which is huge.
Yeah, basically, organizations can now stream every single policy decision made by Docker sandboxes directly to their existing security monitoring tools, like Splunk and Dynatrace, using a standard secure HTTPS connection.
The timing is definitely not a coincidence, given the EU compliance deadline we just talked about. I mean, this solves a massive pragmatic security headache for teams running autonomous agents. But the crucial design choice Docker made here is focusing entirely on what they call enforcement point logging.
Right. And this is a fundamental shift in how we monitor AI. Think about how people usually do it today. They look at the agent's transcript, they look at the text, the language model output to see what it said it was going to do.
Right. But relying on transcript-based logging is like asking a suspected bank robber what they did today. They aren't going to tell you about the vault doors they tried to pry open.
Exactly.
If an agent tries to make a malicious tool call or, you know, reach out to a blocked domain to exfiltrate data and the sandbox denies it, that denied action leaves zero trace in the agent's normal conversational output. The agent simply doesn't get the data.
That's why enforcement point logging is so vital. It's like checking the security cameras at the locked vault itself, rather than reading the thief's diary. You have to log the denials at the infrastructure firewall to actually prove to auditors that your security controls are working.
I understand the value there, but wait, let me push back on this a little bit. So if we are only logging the denials at the firewall, aren't we still kind of blind to an agent that does something highly destructive, but technically allowed by the system?
What do you mean?
Like, what if an agent has permission to delete files and it suddenly decides to delete the entire production database because of a bad prompt? The firewall allows it, so it doesn't trigger an enforcement point alarm, right?
That is an excellent point, and it's the exact gap in purely infrastructure-level security. Docker's logs capture metadata, only they never capture the prompt content, the agent's reasoning, or the parameter values.
Which is great for privacy, I guess.
Yes, great for privacy, but it leaves you blind to intent. However, this is just step one for them. Docker's future roadmap involves taking this massive stream of audit metadata and building automated anomaly detection on top of it.
So establishing a baseline of normal behavior.
Right. They want to use this audit trail to actively watch for weird, out-of-character agent behavior. So if an agent that usually reads 5 files a minute suddenly tries to delete 10,000 files in a second, the system flags it as an anomaly and suggests remediations, even if the action was technically permitted by the firewall.
That makes a lot of sense. It's about building an immune system for your AI infrastructure.
Exactly.
All right, let's move on to our next story. Up next, we're diving into a massive wave of developer tool updates, starting with Claude Code giving you total control over your execution environments.
Yeah, Claude Code just shipped a major new update, version 2.1.224, and the absolute headline feature here is their self-hosted runner.
Okay, tell me about that.
Well, if you're on a team or enterprise plan, you no longer have to run your agent's code inside Anthropic's cloud sandboxes. You can now turn your own local machine or your own secure internal containers into the execution environment.
I mean, as someone who loves playing with new tech but hates the security risks of sending proprietary code to the cloud, this is huge.
It really is. This is exactly what enterprise security teams have been demanding. With self-hosting, you keep the agent's execution strictly within infrastructure you control.
Right.
You get the intelligence of the Claude model, but the code it writes and executes never leaves your virtual private cloud. It's a massive win for data sovereignty.
They also added AWS credential masking, so your sandbox sessions can work with signed Amazon Web Services requests without ever exposing your raw plain text security keys to the agent itself, which is great.
Definitely.
But okay, my absolute favorite feature in this release, and this is just wild, is the cross-session messaging capability.
I had a feeling you'd geek out over this one.
It is straight out of sci-fi. Separate Claude Code sessions can now message each other by name. And they added a discovery feature, the list agents command, so they can actually find each other across active sessions on your machine.
Without a shared parent process, right?
Exactly. You don't even need a shared parent process managing them. You are basically setting up a virtual J team in your terminal that can coordinate autonomously.
It is a profound shift in architecture. Imagine you have one agent acting as a front-end specialist and another agent acting as a database engineer.
Okay.
The front-end agent realizes it needs a new API endpoint. So it autonomously discovers the backend agent, sends it a message requesting the payload structure, waits for the response, and then finishes its UI work.
It's incredible, though honestly, it begs the question how long until these agents start having water cooler gossip about our terrible spaghetti code.
Oh, I'm sure they are already judging us harshly. But practically speaking, coordinating multiple specialized, narrow agents is exactly where software development is heading. It's far more reliable than asking one massive model to do everything.
Very true.
Though I have to say, my favorite update here isn't the autonomous networking. It's a UX feature they dropped for VS Code. They added a focus view.
Oh, to hide all the messy background work.
Exactly. When you are watching an agent work, scrolling through endless intermediate tool calls, the raw JSON payloads it's sending, the connection retries, I mean, this is mentally exhausting.
It really is. It's just a wall of text.
Right. So this focus view hides all that chaotic activity behind an expandable summary with a clean, live running tool indicator. You can follow the agent's overarching logic without drowning in terminal vomit.
Moving on, the next story is about OpenAI Codex. Codex just shipped a major command line update that turns your fragmented one-off scripts into reusable agent plugins.
This is a fundamental change in how we manage agent capabilities. Previously, if you wrote a cool script for your agent, it was just stuck on your machine.
Yeah.
Now, agent plugins can be packaged, installed as portable artifacts, and searched across local, personal, workspace, and even remote catalogs.
This convergence of the ecosystem is what I am most optimistic about. Codex can now even import custom skills that were originally built for the cursor editor, and they've officially adopted the stateless model context protocol standard.
Right, and for those who haven't dug into the underlying protocols, the Model Context Protocol, or MCP, is basically a universal standard that allows AI models to discover data sources and tools in a uniform way. By adopting the stateless version of this standard, it allows for paginated discovery, meaning an agent can search through thousands of tools without crashing, and it makes the whole ecosystem incredibly interoperable.
Exactly. And just a quick administrative note for the ChatGPT authenticated users out there. OpenAI is officially retiring their older GPT 5.4 and GPT 5.4 mini models from Codex at the end of the month, pushing everyone toward the newer Terra and Luna models.
Good to know.
But what I really want to talk about in this Codex release is the introduction of a new command line flag called Approve For Me.
Yes, this is a fascinating addition. This lets developers opt into a lighter touch approval flow for routine actions. Instead of forcing a manual confirmation from the developer for every single tool call, the system automatically reviews and approves benign actions.
Wait a second, hold on. Doesn't that directly conflict with the EU AI Act stuff we were just talking about?
Wow.
You just said the regulators are demanding meaningful human oversight, and now OpenAI is shipping an Approve For Me button that literally removes the human from the loop.
It highlights the exact messy reality of implementing these regulations. From a legal perspective, yes, it seems totally contradictory. But on the ground, developers are suffering from severe alert fatigue.
Okay, that's fair.
If you force an engineer to manually click approve for 50 completely benign file read operations in a row, human psychology dictates they're going to stop paying attention.
Yeah, they'll just zone out.
They will just start blindly clicking yes, and eventually they will blindly approve the one malicious operation that deletes a critical system file.
Okay, I see your point. By automating the approval of the safe stuff, you preserve the human's attention for the high-risk actions.
Exactly. Features like this are desperately needed to make agents actually usable in the real world, but they walk a very delicate, precarious line against the incoming regulatory frameworks. It's the brakes and the engine fighting each other in real time.
All right, shifting gears for our final story today. Up next, we have Alama bringing some serious frictionless speed upgrades to Apple Silicon users.
This is such a cool under-the-hood optimization for developers running local models. Alama's latest MLX engine update has dramatically improved the inference speed for the Qwen 3.5 models on M-Series Max.
Okay, how are they doing that?
They achieve this by automatically utilizing the model's multi-token prediction capabilities for speculative decoding.
Okay, speculative decoding is one of those concepts that sounds like absolute magic until you break down the mechanics. Normally, a large language model generates text sequentially. It calculates one single token, which is basically a piece of a word at a time. It's a very heavy, mathematically slow calculation.
Right, because it has to run the entire massive neural network just to guess the next syllable.
But with speculative decoding, the model is essentially guessing its own next steps. It uses a faster, lighter process to draft multiple future tokens all at once, and then it verifies all of those guesses simultaneously against the main compute graph.
Traditionally, to do this, you had to load a completely separate, smaller draft model into your computer's memory to make those quick guesses.
Which was clunky and ate up RAM, right?
Yeah, exactly. But the genius of what the Alama team has done here on Apple Silicon is that they use the main model's own specialized prediction head to do the drafting. And they fuse that verification process directly into the main forward pass.
And crucially, they eliminated what's known as the per-token kernel dispatch penalty.
That is the real performance unlock. Think of the processor like a chef in a kitchen. The kernel dispatch penalty is like the chef stopping to ask the head chef for instructions before chopping every single slice of a carrot.
It's wildly inefficient.
Yeah.
By fusing the steps, it's like giving the chef the whole recipe up front. The processor doesn't have to constantly stop and ask for new instructions for every single token. It processes the whole batch of guesses smoothly.
And for developers running these massive complex models locally, you're going to see a dramatically higher tokens per second rate on your machine.
Which is awesome.
And the absolute best part of this from a pragmatic engineering perspective, it is completely zero friction.
Really? No code changes?
None. If you are a developer using Alama, you don't have to change a single line of your application code. You don't have to change how you pull the models or how you serve them through your API. You just update your software, and suddenly your local models are ripping fast.
Zero friction speed upgrades. You absolutely love to see it.
So if we synthesize everything we've looked at today, a very clear narrative emerges. On one hand, the tools are getting exponentially faster and more capable.
Yeah, Gina AI is cutting search latency in half with hybrid attention. Llama is pushing massive models faster on local hardware. And Claude Code is letting autonomous agents network with each other across your terminal.
The engines are getting massive.
But simultaneously, the guardrails are shifting from best practice suggestions to strictly enforced legal realities.
Right. The EU AI Act deadline is here with severe logging demands. And tools like Docker's enforcement point audit logs are the new mandatory brakes to keep everything on the track.
So, here's a thought for you to mull over as you head back to your IDE. With Claude agents now autonomously discovering and messaging each other in the background to solve problems, and Codex turning custom scripts into portable, swappable agent plugins, are we rapidly shifting away from being traditional code writers? Are we actually just becoming the managers of a digital workforce?
It really feels like the race car starting to drive itself. We're just the pit crew trying to keep it fueled, compliant, and on the track.
Exactly. Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive. We appreciate your time, your curiosity, and your drive to cut through the noise.
Keep learning and keep building.
This has been the Java Rubber Duck Podcast. We'll see you next time.